So Francoise has been on Power Pearls podcast before. She was episode 26. Yeah, episode 26. My goodness. And now we're already at episode 66. So I can't believe this. So you're back.
Yeah.
And a lot has changed. A lot has changed since you were last on Power Pearls podcast. So we're going to dig into that. But so I just want to give a little bit of kind of a shout out to everyone that's joining, so I can see some people coming into the room and kind of go through the housekeeping and ask everybody to share. So I'm going to say hi to Jennifer, and we have Yo in the room. Melanie is here. And then at the end of this podcast video, we're going to have a Q&A session. Is that cool with you, Francoise?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. All right. Olivia's here. Hello, you guys. So take a moment, everyone, and please share this with your friends, because the more the merrier. And anyone that's coming in right now, just please introduce yourself and, you know, just share where you're viewing from. And then, yeah, and then we will jump in. So let me just give you a little bit of background real quick, though. Episode 26 was the first episode that Francoise was on with me. And I asked a bunch of strategy questions, I guess, about how she grew her Instagram following from back then. It was 15,000, right? And so how she did that in a very systematic way. And you gave some really great advice during that episode, Francoise. And now she's at, or you're at 26,600 followers on Instagram, which is amazing. And so you have just been keeping up with that with a consistent process. And, you know, it's very strategic on your part, isn't it?
Yes.
To have been doing that. So, all right. So Elisa's here. Christy's here. All right, you guys. So, so Francoise, I am going to stop gabbing here and I'm going to let you jump in and share, you know, bring everyone up to speed who hasn't, maybe they haven't heard that episode, and maybe they don't know you, but I'd be surprised if they haven't heard of you. But just share a little background about yourself with the viewers.
Okay, so a little bit of a background. So my name is Francoise. I am a knitwear designer, and I'm currently living in Osaka, Japan. I call myself now what I like to refer to myself as a yarn alchemist, kind of like the fancy way for a knitwear designer. And basically what I do is help my knitters, my tribe, and I call them fiber muses. So I got my group of fiber muses, and I'm the yarn alchemist who, you know, resides over them. I help them transform their yarn into pieces of fiber art to help them feel confident about, you know, them creating, you know, beautiful hand knits. And I've been designing knitwear for about 2.5 years now, I believe. And I've been knitting for about 3 years. So when I first learned how to knit, it was an instant love for me. So I kind of like dived into designing knitwear not long after I learned how to knit. And since then, I've just been working on growing my business my business is Aroha Knits. And so I've been growing that for about the past 2.5 years. And I met Kara last year.
I think it was longer ago than,
yeah,
that. Because you were published in, I know it was a spring issue of Creative Knitting. I think it was 2016, but of course, yeah, that means we would have had to meet the year before that in order for you to get into the magazine. That's right. So that's how we met. And you just sent in a design proposal. And I think along the way, you were listening to the podcast already, you had said,
yes,
and you had downloaded my 8 steps to creating a killer design, I think, or mm-hmm, something like that. And so you had, you know, decided to submit your work. And I remember seeing your submission and I was just like, who is this? How professional, you know? And that's the thing. I mean, I always talk about that. It's like, it, you know, make the editor's job easy. And you definitely made my life super easy. So at that point, how many years in were you into designing? Because you had just, you said you've been knitting for 3 years now? Knitting,
yes.
Plus, that's it?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's my cat, sorry.
Okay. You know what? That's okay, because I just like kind of a little sidebar here. You've got your cat, and I've got my husband upstairs washing the dishes. So, hey, it's called real life. Don't worry about it. It's kind of funny because at first it's like, it sounded like someone's dying or screaming in the background. So anyway, don't worry about it, Francoise. It's cool. Okay. It's all good. And I know that everyone in the audience is fine. So, so you were knitting. You were knitting for 3 years. So you decided how quickly during those 3 years time, how quickly did you decide to start diving into designing? And I mean, that's confidence, man, because you were.
I don't think it was confidence. It was like, I'm going to do this. And I was like, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah, that's great. I hear that all the time. Like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm doing it anyway because you just loved it, right? So you just were like, hey, it doesn't matter. I'm just going to feel my way through. It's almost like that, the staircase analogy or the headlights analogy or whatever you want to call it, where you're just like, okay, I'm going to keep going and I can't see what's way, way down the road. But if I can see what's right here in front of me, I'll go with that. And then, you know, take the next step. Right. So, how long were you into it when you had submitted to creative knitting? Like how long were you designing or trying to design at that point? Cause you looked like super, super polished at that point, but you were following all the directions. That's why.
let's see. When I submitted that design, I think I was in my, okay, so I started designing in the middle of 2014, and then 2015, that's when I decided, I made like that intentional decision to, you know, pursue knitwear design professionally, like as a career. Mm-hmm. So I think I'd been doing it for about like a year and a half. And I remember being really happy with that acceptance because I'd submitted plenty of designs to other places, you know, just trying to find a place to, you know, pick me up. And I kept on getting rejections. So it was just really nice.
Oh, wow.
It was really nice to get that email of like that from that yes. And it was definitely, obviously, like it created a connection between us. So that's definitely been like the most fortuitous, is that the word? Acceptance.
Yes. No, that's great because then it led to this beautiful relationship that we've been, because we talk
monthly
now. Like we talk monthly. So for anyone, just kind of putting it out there, you know, we work together. So we do one-on-one coaching and it's been a couple of years now. So I think you started that up. Yeah, we've been doing this regularly for quite a while now. So, you know, we can talk more about that, I guess, later if you want to, but, or we can just skip around and go with whatever comes next. But so, when you asked about why did you think you needed to go in that direction? That, you know, why did you think that coaching would be that way to help you get where you needed to be?
Well, with coaching, it's always really helpful to have somebody who's, you know, been through the industry before. It's kind of like, you know, that 10 steps ahead of you, you know, to help you kind of see outside of yourself, because when you're by yourself, you just have a very limited vision or perspective. So just having an outside voice just giving you their advice and their experiences and their opinions on things has just been really helpful. And also just knowing that you're not alone in doing things, you know, just for that and getting over the fear factor. Yeah,
I think it's also like a mirror, you know, and it's also that person is they're unbiased, you know, in their opinion, but it's based on obviously being in the industry that they've, like you said, been in it. They're 10 steps ahead of you. But having that unbiased approach, like this is what it is. This is the real deal. And I'm going to, you know, this is it, without kind of holding back or being a friend is right. And that is a big difference, right? Because, a lot of the time to find someone and not just a friend, but a friend that's actually, really understands what it is that we want to achieve and is at that level that we want to be at. It's hard sometimes to find that. And when you do find that chemistry, that's great. You know, that's really great. And that's a natural fit. And I know that you have types of relationships. I know Chelsea Fitch is a perfect example of that. I mean, she's been on the podcast as well. And you and Chelsea you guys are very similar in your mindset, which is really pretty cool. So you guys have partnered and done a lot together, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you have some new stuff coming up. So you can share later on kind of maybe what you guys have cooking, because I know you probably do. So I guess, like as far as the accountability aspect of coaching, How has that helped you to just stay more accountable to your goals?
Well, when I stay more accountable to my goals, I actually see them through, basically. And, you know, and when it comes to like achieving goals, it's, you know, less about succeeding or failing, it's just more about getting them done and learning the lessons from them. So that way, when you set your next goal, you're able to adjust and pivot to see how you can make it better. Or, you know, maybe like, for example, if I didn't hit my goal last time, I could figure out like, what do I need to adjust? What can I do better? And if I did succeed in a goal, I can think about like, okay, so what went well? Why did it go well? And things like that. And then just replicate that. So it's less about like hitting them or not. It's more about actually just getting it done.
Because if
I was just so focused on like, oh, I really need this to succeed, or, you know, if this fails and it's over, then I would probably not get it done. So,
So, sorry, this is like a little tiny sidebar. That's my like new word. One of the viewers asked if you could move your camera away turn your camera a little bit away from the window. I guess there's a big glare. Yeah, is that looks better.
My camera looks like it's broken. Like there's a weird, can you see this weird like
a line? I don't see a line or any kind of, no, I don't see any separation in your frame.
Weird. Wow. Okay.
No, okay. You look great. You look great.
Okay.
So, okay.
Yeah, I noticed that. So I was just like, you know, adjusting my camera.
No problem.
Although I will say you might see my husband popping out from the bedroom.
Oh, really? yeah. Again, hey, that's real life. So, you know, just a little bit more on that. So, so let's see. So, is there, looking back on our experiences together, because we've been working together one-on-one for over a year, I think. It's been a while. And is there anything that you can kind of, I mean, I'm putting you on the spot, of course. If there was a big goal or a challenge, like let's say a challenge that that one of our sessions or a series of our sessions has helped you kind of overcome. Can you think of anything?
Let me see. With your sessions is definitely being a really good, you know, confidence boost. You know, so I'll come to you with my ideas. I'll talk them through with you, and then you'll give your feedback, and then I'll be like, okay, I guess I can do this. And so I'll go ahead and, just go through that. But also I think another one that was definitely really helpful was the TNNA sessions. And also because since we were both there together, you also gave me that in-person help with that, which was invaluable. And then also recently, with the shift that's going on in my brand, you know, going from single monthly pattern releases to quarterly publication releases, I just like came to you with all my questions about like how to do a magazine, basically.
Yeah. That's kind of funny because, and I didn't know if you wanted to go into sharing that, but it's good. I'm glad you did. You know, because that's something that you're embarking on. And so, of course, you know, just like the ins and outs of the editorial process that, you know, those are the things that I'm, of course, very familiar with. And, you know, just little questions that come up that you may not, you know, you may not even think of that I was used to experiencing. And then also that kind of, you kind of have to juggle, and I hate to use the word multitask because I don't believe in multitasking. I was just listening to the audiobook, The One Thing. I don't know if have you ever read that?
Not yet.
The One Thing.
No, it's
great.
On my list.
Great. And I've listened to it many times, but every time I listen to it, it's like I just listened to it to the first time. And this the whole idea of multitasking is a big lie. But anyway, that's a whole other conversation, you guys. But the whole idea of when you are putting together different puzzle pieces, right? And sort of kind of looking at that big overarching picture. So that's something that we've been talking about, but you've been so far so good. So,
good.
Yeah. But yeah, it is a lot of work, but I think as long as, you're just kind of chipping away at all those different tasks and kind of, you know, you work from a big project list, you know, a task list, and just kind of almost like an editorial calendar. I think we talked about that. Have you implemented something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got my planner, and I just write down all the dates on there.
And you know, like even just to have a good old-fashioned spreadsheet with dates plotted out and then being able to look at that. I mean, of course, having it on your calendar is great, but then, and this was how it worked with when I was with the magazine, because you've had, I would have several magazines, right? Mm-hmm. So to see several magazines and all these dates to see, oh, there's that date, this date. Oh my gosh. Okay. And then getting organized in that respect, where you can just see the entire overarching map, so to speak, mm-hmm. you know, but that's in the future when you, when you start to have that second magazine come out. So, well, this is, yeah, great. Well, thanks for sharing all that. So I guess we could switch gears a little bit. I'm looking down here because I want to take maybe some questions in between. I was mm-hmm. going to wait till the end. Maybe we can kind of keep within the flow of what we're talking about, and I'll just post some questions as we go.
Yeah.
Let's see. Let me see if I can put it on screen. Okay, here it is. So Jennifer says, I am knitting your, I can't say that word. Can you see it?
Yeah.
What? I'm sorry. What? How do you pronounce that?
Tokirauru.
Okay. Shawl. And I just finished the second lace panel and love it. Using yarn from my line on it, and it's turning out beautiful. Thank you for such a beautiful pattern. Well, that's great, Jennifer.
Thank you, Jennifer.
That's awesome. So let me just see. I do have a few other questions. I'll just jump into from some of my patrons. So the Patreon community of Power Pearls had the first dibs at asking you questions, Francois. So mm-hmm. I'm gonna jump in, and then we'll switch gears back to some other questions or other things that I'd like to ask you. So number one, and this is from Melanie, and I see Melanie is here watching. Boy, it must be late for you, Melanie. Melanie's in Germany. Anyway, and then now I'm confused because, well, Francoise, you're in Japan. What time is it in Japan?
It is 8:18 a.m. Oh, it's Thursday.
So it's morning. Okay. And then in Germany, it's, let's see, 7. It's 1 o'clock, Melanie. Wow. She really wanted to see you, by the way,
you,
Francoise. Okay. So Melanie says, asks, how has your design process changed compared to the process when you were just getting started?
That's actually a really good question, because when I saw that, I realized that it hasn't really changed that much. I've just become more efficient and more streamlined, but the way I go through it hasn't changed at all. Like, I start with a sketch, then I go on to swatching and choosing the yarns, then knitting up the pattern, maybe even writing a quick draft, but then I knit up the sample, then I write up the full pattern, get it tech edited, get it test knit, and then publish. But it's like pretty much been the same since the beginning. It's just become more efficient and streamlined. And now I'm teaching that process to other people as well, you know, like the systematic way of getting your patterns published, or, you know, designing and publishing patterns. So,
and that's the initiate design. Is that what you call it's called?
The challenge is initiate knit design, but the actual, like, full in-depth version is Swatch Studio.
And so when is your next challenge?
For the initiate knit design, I do not know. I'm thinking sometime in the fall or winter. Mm-hmm. I just got help. I'm just trying to figure out the planning and the dates for everything, because I've got other challenges coming up as well mm-hmm. during that time. So just trying to figure out and juggle everything.
Okay. So they take this challenge, and it's like what? Like a 7-day, 5-day?
10 days.
10 days. And they get live, you know, streaming videos, and then they can take your course, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That's great. Okay, cool. So let me ask you another question now, Francois.
Sure.
So how long does it take to go from this in the first one, but how long does it take to go from design to finished pattern ready for release? Could you kind of answer that, maybe?
Kind of a little bit, but the timeline, maybe it depends on the project, but for like shawls, it takes about 3 months.
Mm.
2 to 3 months. It's, for hats, about a month or two. For garments, a little bit longer, because it's usually, because the longest amount of time is just for the knitting up the sample and the test knitting process. It's the test knitting that takes up like the biggest chunk of time in there.
Yeah, that is a lot. And now you're working with a test knitter, or are you doing all that yourself? I know you have a tech editor, but are you doing all the test knitting primarily yourself?
For this first collection that I'm working on, I'm mostly working on the samples myself. So, mm-hmm. and then having a tech editor look it over. I might get a second tech editor to give it a look over as well. But because of the tight mm-hmm. deadlines, I might have to skip the test knitting process. So I'm going to have to be very eagle-eyed mm-hmm. on my work.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I'm just going to give you a little piece of advice, coaching advice here,
yes.
because I have seen this happen with others and I was kind of borderline like this myself, but you know, it's really a good idea to mm-hmm. always have a test knitter.
Yeah.
You're the business person, farm it out because you want to keep your passion for knitting alive because, you know, at some point, I mean, do you still like to knit for fun or you don't anymore?
Knit for fun. Ever since I started designing, I never really knit any other people's patterns. So the projects that I'm knitting are my new designs, and that's what really keeps me invigorated. Like every time I start a new project, I'm just like really excited. So
you are
still,
okay, good.
It's still fun for me. So even when I'm like on this tight deadline here, like
yeah, well, good,
still fun.
That's just something to keep in mind for the future. And that was advice given to me by my mentor years ago. And, you know, because the thing is it's true. Like just what I said, it's your business. And so you've got to keep your eye on the overarching goals of what it is that you're doing. And I know that you do because you do a great job at it, but to really farm out the test knitting, but you really enjoy it. So at any time that you feel like, oh, this is a chore, That's a sign, right? That it's time to really consider that. Another question is, do you work on several projects at the same time or one at a time? And by the way, these are all questions for Melanie. Melanie has a bunch of awesome questions. So yeah, how does that work? How many at a time are you working on?
One. I just cast on one project, see it all the way through, then immediately start casting on the next one. Sometimes I'll have two on the needles and I just rotate between that. But I find for me, I just find it just better for me just to cast on one project, focus on that and get that done.
So are you releasing a collection or one-offs? You know what I'm saying? Like you design a pattern, you knit it up, you test knit it, tech edit, all that fun stuff, and then you release it? Or do you kind of hold, gather up everything, keep them under wraps, and then release a group?
Now I gotta see what you're saying. For this collection, so since this is the first time I'm doing a collection, actually, what I'm doing is knit up all the samples first, like, you know, the samples knit up and out of the way, mm-hmm. and then I write up all the patterns at the same time. So mm-hmm. do all the knitting, and then the pattern writing, and then the release, then they'll all be released at the same time.
So you're batching.
Yes, basically.
The batching approach for like podcasting or writing or blogging. That's really smart. Yeah. That's an interesting topic too. Like, why is it that we get more done quicker and more efficiently when we batch? Why do you think that is?
Maybe because we're able to focus on like one specific task and just repeat that over and over and then move on to the next one instead of trying to go through the whole process, like, you know, going from like knitting up the pattern, writing up the pattern, and getting it tech edited, just better to get it all done and like, you know, at the same time.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I feel like I have an echo. Do you hear me with an echo?
No.
No. Okay, cool. Okay, so here's another question for you. It's a little different. So it's nothing to do with your knitting. Are you an early morning person or do you like late nights? First answer that, and then I'll ask the next question.
I guess for me, I like to get my work done, like my non-knitting work done in the morning. So I guess early morning, although I'm not super early, early morning. Like when I think early morning, I think 7-8 o'clock for me. I start around 9.
Yeah,
and I get my work done at like before lunch. So.
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, I love the mornings myself, but I'm noticing that even if I get up not as early, I don't get up as early as I used to when I was full time with the magazine, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I still find that I have more energy like between whatever it is, 5 to noon. So I get my best work done. And even like I fit in going to the gym and all that stuff. Prime time for design work, but in general, we have more willpower. You know, like willpower runs out throughout the day and it can't be replenished. You know, that's the crazy part, because we all think it can. So I think that kind of ties into, it doesn't matter how, whether you have your really early morning, but I think in general, I think when we first get up, whatever time that is, we have the most energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you have any sort of routine though, or some sort of a ritual that you follow when you get up in the morning, or maybe you do something at night that's kind of, you know, a little bit of a ritual?
Let me see. So I think the reason why I would consider myself more like a morning person is because when I wake up, I kind of see it as like a, you know, it's a new day, it's time to reset, so let's get things working. Whereas at the end of the day, I'm just like, time to wind down. I can't work on anything new. Because, you know, it's almost the end of the day. But for, let's see, in the morning, the first thing I do is, like, I just like to get my notebook out, or my planner, this planner right here, and just, like, write down my to-do tasks for the day, take a look at what I got to do for the week, then write it down, the tasks I need to do for the day. Then I usually have breakfast and a smoothie, you know, just to make sure I'm eating, because sometimes I forget to eat.
Oh, gosh.
And then, yeah.
I know that. From,
yeah, and then one thing I'm trying to do is try to get it up just a little bit earlier so I can go out and do some exercise. Mm. Live really close to the Osaka Castle, so they got a big, you know, grounds for walking and stuff like that. You know, a nice shaded area. So I've been trying to incorporate a little bit like of exercise, you know, into my daily routine. But so far, it's, I still have to work on the willpower to get out of bed for that. But that's, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's, every routine is a little bit different, and there's no perfect routine. And, you know, it's, you kind of have to be flexible each day. Mm-hmm. There was something I was going to ask you, but of course I totally forgot. So I'm going to just say, hey, you guys, anyone that's watching right now, if you didn't ask questions on Facebook, you guys can jump in and ask your questions in the comments. And so I still have a couple more here. Mm-hmm.
I saw Melanie comment shoes by the bed. Japan, we're not allowed to have shoes in the house. Like, even like shoes are meant to stay in. Yeah, I mean, shoes are meant to stay by the door. Like, no shoes in the house. Although sometimes we break that rule. Maybe I'll break that rule.
So even though you are not, you know, you're not Japanese, you're not from that culture, but you follow that because it's sort of like a rule that you, because, you know, no one's going to see if you put your shoes in your place, right?
It's showing just, respect.
It's showing respect, house. Right?
Yeah.
So basically your shoes are left outside the door. So if you leave them out there, then people know that, yes, because we all wear shoes. So you got to leave them outside the door. I get it.
Yeah.
So they know you're showing that. Okay. Wow.
And your jogging kit. Yes. My jogging kit by the bed. Yes. I agree with that.
Wow. I mean, I think that might be a whole other podcast, a separate kind of conversation about the culture and what it's like to live in Japan, and just kind of sharing those little ins and outs there. But mm-hmm. That would be a go, won't it? So how do you choose colors when you go about just, you know, setting out for your new collection? Do you follow trends, or do you feel like, oh, I really love this powder blue, I'm going with that?
It just really depends on the design that I'm working on. When I'm first working out the sketches, usually the color for the design usually starts popping up during then. Like, let me see, I don't have any examples at the moment, but usually when I'm like working on the design, the color, like sometimes it's very apparent, like the colors, I like, this is the color that I want to go for. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when I'm working with yarn companies, they send me the color themselves, and then I have to work the design around that color. But I usually do have my like favorite colors. Like, I like to go for like semi-solid colorways, blues, yellows, sometimes some reds, purples.
You use a lot of amethyst, I noticed. So that's like a color that you really like.
It's with my pattern collections now, because they're based around a theme that kind of determines the colorways that I'll be using for those and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, for example, for the first publication, it's more rustic and natural colors, maybe some warmer tones and things like that. When it comes, I'm not the best, like, color chooser. If that's a word.
Oh, I think you are. I think you know you are. But I think it's also like, and this goes back to my experience as a magazine editor too. You know, you're telling a story, not just with the pattern and in words and that sort of thing, but you're telling a story with color as mm-hmm. well, right? So it's like you were talking about rustic and more earth colors, and that's obviously a story within itself. I mean, you really don't need to explain what that's all about, but it sets the mood, it sets the tone of what you're trying to say. So color mm-hmm. is a really powerful way to do that as well. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your Maori culture, because we were talking about the culture in Japan, and so that was a good little segue here, though, just to talk about that and, you know, how that has an influence and has an influence on your design work.
Let me see. I'm trying to figure out a way to get my words together early in the morning. Well, I think pretty much like my Maori culture, my cultural heritage, my mom's Maori and my dad's French. I think though the Maori culture is pretty much like influenced me from the very beginning, from when I first started knitting, because when I first picked up the knitting needles, I immediately started getting like this, what I considered at the time, like a crazy idea of maybe of, you know, incorporating Maori motifs into knitting patterns. And if I couldn't find patterns that had that, I would make them myself. And that's what pretty much like prompted me to start designing and pushing myself to learn different techniques, because traditional Maori motifs have a lot of geometric shapes in it that I found that would be very suitable for stranded knitting. But when I first started knitting, I didn't know how to do that. So mm-hmm. I kind of set that as a goal for myself to learn how to do stranded knitting, fair isle knitting, so I could start incorporating those types of designs into my work. And so it was just like, I think of like a year into it, or not a year, maybe like 7 months after I learned how to knit, I created my first colorwork design with the first Maori motif in there, and I was just really happy with that. But I did find out along the way that lace work is my favorite type of knitting pattern to work on. So color work isn't my number one design feature, but every time I do work with, you know, do color work, I always resort to using Maori motifs. But even in my lace knitting, or even in my like cable knitting, I always try and find a way to incorporate the Maori culture into the design, because growing up I was pretty kind of like disconnected from it. My parents mostly, like, you know, we focused on, you know, my French side, you know, learning how to speak French, lived in France for a few years, majored in French in college, because, you know, French is more useful than learning Maori, unfortunately. But so when I took up knitting, I used that as an opportunity to reconnect with my mother's culture and learn about my heritage and things like that. So, you know, I use the language, I kind of take like the essence and the themes from the culture into my design work, and kind of weave that into the story, just, you know, because basically as I'm learning about it, I'm also sharing that experience with my audience as well. So it's growing.
Along the way, yeah. So you share that with your audience. You're telling that story. And also some people have kind of stepped up from, you know, from the culture to like say, hey, you know, I'm a knitter too. And like kind of you've created this interesting culture around your culture. I guess that's the right way to say it. So it's opened up some new doors, hasn't it?
A little bit, yeah. At the moment, it's kind of like a three-way process, for a way for me to get reconnected to my culture, then also introducing it to the knitting community, but then also hopefully there's another way to actually connect to the people themselves, you know, Maori, and introduce them to knitting. So it's kind of like a two-way thing, like introduce knitters to the Maori culture and then introduce the Maori culture to knitting. Mm-hmm. So far, like the one part, it's been, you know, introducing the knitting community to the Maori culture has definitely been like easier for me at the moment. I haven't been able to really find that many Maori knitters, but you know, that's kind of like still on the horizon there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so currently though, you've been really shifting your focus over the last several months to just call yourself a yarn alchemist.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you, I even had it in the intro, Transform your yarn. Yes. Yeah. So that's your tag. That's your tagline. It's great. It's brilliant. So that's really kind of where you've been going, you know, working with your students, starting the challenge, then going into the studio, Swatch studio, right? Mm-hmm. Keep getting that wrong. And so tell me a little bit about how you've kind of evolved into this place now, kind of with, you know, everything that's going on, your brand, your Māori culture, and now Yarn Alchemist. So let's talk about that. Like, what is your overarching goal and your brand mission, so to speak, here?
Oh boy, I mean, this has been through like just over the past year, just trying to figure out what I want to do in the community, like what my mission is, like why I'm doing what I'm doing, basically, and just trying to find a way to like basically like focus myself into a brand, just like so that way things are more like intentional and strategized, because that's the way I like to think. I just like to have things like very focused and, you know, this is what I do, you know, very lined up and neat, basically. Mm-hmm. Which is sometimes can be the opposite of a lot of people in this industry, because people are a lot more creative and a lot more fluid than me. But for me, I need that structure.
Oh, so I totally get it. I'm the same way. I have both sides of the brain thing going on, and I need things like all my ducks in a row or I go absolutely nuts. But anyway, so carry on.
Yeah. So I guess now like this Yarn Alchemist Transform Your Yarn thing is like, it's been the latest reiteration of my brand. Like my brand's gone through a lot of changes over the years, but my name is still Arahan. It's like that. Mm-hmm. Still incorporating that Māori touch into my work is still in there. So that's like kind of like the underpinnings of it. But right at the moment, I've discovered that, you know, I basically help people transform their yarn, you know, from different, like in different aspects, you know, just from knitters, from aspiring designers and things like that. And it's, you know, it's just all about the, you know, transformation, find that in, like that confidence within yourself so that way you can take on those, you know, challenging projects and stepping outside your creative comfort zone in order to make some magical things happen. So, yeah.
Well, that's great. So what is the future, you know, what's coming up? So you talked about, okay, we already kind of went there, but the challenge is coming up in the fall. Anything that's coming up like now or anything that's going on right now that you want to talk about that people should really check out? And
let me see. So, I mean, at the moment, like my brand's going another transformation of its own. I guess it's another one. At the beginning of the year, I launched a physical subscription yarn club called the Fiber Muse Alchemy Kits. And that was a really big hit. And then I realized that I really liked the direction that was going. So, because even though I have like my design e-course and then, you know, the subscription kits and stuff like that, knitwear design is still like my number one love. And that's what I really love to do the most. And so I was just trying to, you know, thinking about a way to really amp that up and be more intentional and strategic about the way that I release my patterns and, you know, trying to tie it into more of a theme and things like that. So I've been shifting from single monthly pattern releases to thinking about doing quarterly publications to go along with the alchemy kits, because that was very limited. It was because the physical products, it was, you know, limited to a certain number of subscribers. So with this publication, it's going to be digital, and it's going to invite more people in into this. But so that's what I've been working on right now, focusing on launching a collection of patterns every quarter instead of doing it a single pattern every month, which has been pretty much the typical business model for knitwear designers at the moment. Because I've been, you know, the past year, even last year as well, I've been testing different ways for pattern releases to have the most effective pattern releases. And also, you know, figuring out like what's the best way for me to make a living off of my craft of what I love to do. Mm-hmm. So this is just like the newest experiment in that. Yeah. And so we'll just have to see how that goes.
Simplify to amplify.
Exactly. Yeah. So I've been like cutting out parts of my business that I was doing last, like, you know, for the past few months, and just dropping that so that way I can focus on what really makes me happy and like the core. Yeah. Parts of my business model, basically. Delegating the rest to my assistant or just deleting it altogether.
That's really smart. Saying no is really, really hard. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I think that what happens is we can get caught up in thinking that everything is important, and like especially if it's on our to-do list or our task list. And so we kind of run into that mistake of, yeah, you know, thinking that, you know, just because it's on the list, it's important. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah. No. And yeah, so that is a hard thing. And you know, kudos to you for, you know, deleting things and saying no, because it is really, really hard. But I think that that's the secret to business success and personal success too. So this applies, you know, in both areas. So what has been your biggest challenge, you know, kind of to sum all up a lot of the things that we've been talking about, like what is, or something that you struggle, let's put it this way, like scaling it down to maybe an everyday, because I'm throwing all these questions at you. What is the biggest thing that you struggle with when it comes to staying organized or kind of moving in the next, you know, the next direction for what it is that you want to achieve in your business?
Well, the biggest thing that I'm struggling with right now is kind of like shifting my mindset from like short-term goals and short-term like project and deadline things to long-term. Because when you're working on a publication, you have to, and also the subscription club that I'm doing, like you have to like plan months and months, even a year in advance for the things. Yeah. And that's just like, for me, I can only, like before, because I was thinking in terms of 3 months, because that's how long it would take to publish a pattern. Now I'm shifting to a much longer timeline. So it's just been interesting to kind of like shift my mind around that as well, and making sure that everything, all the dates sit down, planning ahead, making sure I've got enough time ahead of time, mm-hmm. and not letting, you know, time slip me by, because I'm thinking, oh, I've got 2 months, I can do this next week. And then it ends up being like 2 weeks before the deadline.
Well, and you know, that's a really good a good point that you brought up, because you know, going back to what I said before about the spreadsheet idea, and this is like a great way to really plot out what it is that you're going to do. If you're looking, let's say you've got a spreadsheet and you have a task, and then across the top you have columns, mm-hmm. for the certain different landmark things that have to get done, right? Like send out design, you know, send out a call for submissions. Let's say if you're going to have designers in your publication, tech editing starts, you know, begin the editing process, proofreading, final proofreading, whatever it is, like all these graphics for X, Y, and Z need to be ready. The cover needs to be ready. Web, you know, what we're putting up on the web has to be ready by this date. You know, launching, pre-launch is this date. And it's all flowed on these columns, right? Mm-hmm. So then you're just plugging in the dates, looking at your other, you know, paper calendar next to you, instead of saying, oh, that looks like a good date. 2 months from, yeah, just put it right there. But maybe there's no rhyme or reason. You know what I mean? And I get into doing that. But I know from my experience, from, you know, being doing this with magazines, it's like if you're plotting it out in a way that's, you can really flesh it out and see all those dates and even use a mathematical formula, mm-hmm. right? So if you say, well, you know, I think that it's going to take, on average, every time I need to do tech editing, it's going to be 6 weeks. I mean, that's probably a long time. But then you set those dates and even create formulas in your spreadsheet so that it'll put a date in that's 6 weeks later. Mm-hmm. I know that's all, you'd have to like, you know, get fancy with your formulas, but you wouldn't have to do that. You could even just, you know, plug those dates in manually. But that's the way to see it from a big picture perspective. So anyway, mm-hmm. that's just a little bit of advice. And just to take the one thing, to get out of that, oh my gosh, I can't see that far into the future syndrome. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that helped yes. a little bit. Did that help? So now I'm going to go practice the same thing I just mentioned. So so anyway, I have one more question for you.
Okay.
It's kind of a fun little quirky one. So Elisa asks, which is your favorite city to live? Does the place you live have something to do with your knitting designs? So it's a two-part question. So what's your favorite city, and where you live now, has it influenced your designs? I would love to see some, you know, Japanese-inspired something.
I will say that the place I live doesn't really have any influence on my designs, really.
No?
Not really, no.
Really?
Yeah.
I just have this mystique, or I always think of like this romance, not romance, that's not the wrong word, but I'm just fascinated with Japanese culture, you know, and so I guess I have this idea of what it's like, but I guess, so you don't feel like Osaka is kind of like this cosmopolitan
city? I mean, it is, is it? but I don't really draw much of that into my design work, really. I mean, that sounds a little awful, but I think I do. So we moved.
So awful.
We moved apartments in Osaka recently. Before, when we first moved to Osaka, we were like right in the city center, which in this really tiny apartment. But here now we moved to a little bit outside of the city, right next to the castle. So we've got more greenery,
wow. The
quieter area. So I'm actually, so far, I think this has been my favorite place to live, because before we moved to Osaka, we lived in a tiny village down in the south of Japan. Like super tiny, isolated, far away from everything. And while that was good for my business, because it really, you know, gave me a lot of time to really focus and reflect on like what I wanted to do and things like that. For like everything else, it was kind of terrible because we had to travel so far just to do anything fun. But so Osaka has been a lot more convenient. And so this place now has been my favorite place so far, like in our new apartment, because we actually have space. But it's not too much space, and we're close to everything in a really convenient area. And so, yeah, this place has been my favorite so far. But I think we're going to be moving back to the States sometime next year. Not entirely sure where, but.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so then that means that you'll go to TNNA maybe next year.
That's fine. Yeah, I was like, when I saw everybody posting the pictures of them at TNNA this year, I was like,
it's exciting.
I was super jealous. I was like, I should have planned on going to this. Well,
you'll get there again. And
yeah.
it's something it's overwhelming too, because I come back with so many ideas and I can't do everything, you know, and I want to say yes to everything. So in a way, as exciting as it is, it's like, oh my gosh, how do I decline gracefully from that offer, or, you know, and there is a way to do that. So I just have to figure that out. And the one thing that when I met you, the first thing was, oh my gosh, she's so tall. I felt like a little like munchkin next to you. Like, oh my God, I'm so short. So anyway.
I got that a lot.
You're like a runway model. So this was awesome. Thank you for doing this. And before we sign off, can you share some parting wisdom, you know, just some advice for anyone? Because I know a lot of the Power Pearls, Power Pearls, it's getting too late here. Power Pearls listeners are, you know, they're trying to pave their path, you know, as a designer starting out. I know a lot of your community is doing the same. So what kind of advice could you give someone that's like, you know, I really want to do this. I'm not really sure how to start, you know, how can they really start to develop their voice?
Well, I think the best way to, you know, learn how to do things and develop and grow is just by doing and experimenting and just putting yourself out there. And like, yeah, it's going to be really scary because you have all these different fears popping up, but, you know, but the fear is never going to go away. You just have to learn how to kind of like live with it. And also acknowledge that when you're feeling those fears, it means that you should do it because that means you feel really passionately about it. And so the more passionate you feel about something, of course, the more you want it to succeed, and that's when the more fear is going to pop up for you. But that kind of indicates that it's something that you should really do. Just go out and do it. And I've been feeling a lot of fear, like myself right now with this publication, because I'm just terrified that it's going to flop and things like that. But I've just been telling myself I just need to see it through, you know, and just go for it. Just basically go for it.
Well, here's a nice little quote to leave you and everyone with is, I'd rather have a life filled with oh wells than what ifs. Right? Mm-hmm. So, oh well, it didn't work. It was a flop. You got to put yourself out there, right? And get through the fire. And you're doing it. So you're scared. That's just a good sign. You're doing it.
Yeah.
So it's really exciting. And so people can find you on Aroha Knits. I didn't say that right, but Aroha Knits. Did I say that pretty good?
Aroha. Yeah.
Aroha. Yeah. And that's spelled AROHAKNITS, obviously. Arahanits.com. And you're on Instagram as the same. Mm-hmm. And anywhere else you want to share your Patreon, maybe?
My Patreon would not be very useful because that's one of the things I've been thinking about deleting, which has been a really scary thing.
Wow. And I'm sorry I mentioned that because I know you said that in our last session, like, you know, kind of thing. But yeah, so obviously Instagram, that's your main social platform, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you're on Facebook, but Instagram is really where it's at for you, right?
Yes. Yes. Okay, and also have a Facebook group, the Fibromuse Sanctuary. That's where my tribe and community hang out together. That's where I host my challenges as well. It's lots of people really like it because they find it really inspirational and a great place for support. Yeah, so it's my Instagram and my Facebook group. Those are my two main places online where I spend most amount of time.
Well, that's great. Well, thanks so much for joining me tonight, today, this morning.
Thanks for having me. And BMO, I guess, he's on my lap right now. Aww. Don't think I can lift him
show
up.
Him. Show him up. No, you can't? Okay.
That's the cat.
Aww, there he is. Hi, bye. That's so great. All right, you guys. Well, thanks for joining us. And I'll see you guys on Friday. All right. Have a good one.
Bye.